you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
WQAD Podcast Network.
The Cities with Jim Mertens, a production of WQPT, PBS for the Quad Cities region, a podcast in partnership with WQAD. What's going on in the Quad Cities? Activities, events, fun, politics, sports, local issues and opinions. And now, your host, Jim Mertens.
I'm Jim Mertens, and this is The Cities. Ballots still being counted in a number of locations, but for the most part, the votes in Illinois and Iowa have been tabulated. Now, for many people, it all started with the Iowa caucuses, which really should have been kind of an indication how the rest of 2020 would unfold. It was messy back in February. It gave some people a black eye, and it was not resolved for days. Wow, does that sound familiar? We're joined by two political veterans, Scott County Democratic Chair Alicia Gaiman and Scott County Republican Chair David Milich, kind of a day after review of what unfolded on Election Day. Alicia, let me start with you. Any surprises? I mean, are you surprised how close this national election between Donald Trump and Joe Biden became?
I don't think so. I mean, the polling was pretty indicative of having a tight race and not necessarily knowing results last night. Having kind of survived the Iowa caucus reporting drama, I'm actually pretty happy that the press were really prepping people to be prepared for that, so there wasn't complete panic. But I don't think it was totally shocking, and I'm not surprised that we still don't have results in some of the key races.
Yeah, and David, I mean, there was discussion about whether or not President Trump might lose some of the states that he had won 4 years ago, and that does not seem to be the case at all.
Well, I think he may lose a couple of the states that he carried in 2016. We haven't got the final results, of course, from Wisconsin, Michigan, or Arizona, but those races are very tight in Pennsylvania and could go into the Biden column. So he may lose a couple states.
Yeah, towards the end of the count, that might be expected. I mean, Arizona, of course, is the big state that flipped early, in fact. Let's talk about turnout. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, Arizona tightened up, and they almost took back their projection. It's tightened up a lot, and there are still a lot of outstanding votes in Arizona that are mostly rural votes that would presumably go towards Trump.
Let's talk about turnout, David. It was amazing. Early voting, incredible in this year of a pandemic. Is this something that you expect in years to come, that there's going to be a greater push for early voting or off-site voting, so to speak?
Yes, I think it worked well. We had a big turnout of the early voters, and the early voters is a lot more safe than that, than mail-in absentee voting, where you have to go through the post office and go through four steps to vote. Early voting is just like going to the polls on Election Day, except that your vote doesn't go into a machine. It goes in an envelope to be counted later. But it worked well. It led to higher turnout. I think we'll see it in the future, and maybe more of it.
Are you really happy with the way that the count went in Scott County, not only the turnout, but the way it was counted?
Yes, very much so. I think starting the vote count of the absentee and early voting on Saturday and having the results at 9 o'clock on Tuesday night was phenomenal work and speaks well of the people who worked the polls.
Alicia, you were talking about some concerns that Democrats had as far as the vote count is as far as Scott County is concerned.
Well, we definitely aren't necessarily concerned about the process. We think all of the volunteers and poll watchers and poll workers did a fantastic job. They put in really long hours this cycle. We obviously have a couple really close races that we're watching, and so there's that small trickle of ballots and the little nuances, I guess, that come up on Election Day. So we are very close in a couple races, and I anticipate recounts.
Well, and let's talk about one in particular, Alicia, the second congressional district for Iowa, between Marionette Miller Meeks, the Republican, and Rita Hart, the Democrat. Fewer than 300 votes separating them in a whole district that stretches much of southeastern Iowa. Obviously, that is one of the areas you're keeping a real close eye on.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's not just for Scott County. Obviously, we're looking at a lot of counties in that situation. So we'll be probably doing a canvass district-wide for that particular seat.
A critically important seat as well, because it's Dave Loebsack's seat. It is a Democratic seat right now. I mean, a loss to Miller Meeks would be a big blow to Democrats, would it not?
It's definitely a seat. We don't ever we never want to give up a seat in an election. So that is definitely true. It is a tough district. It's always been a tough district. Dave was an incredible moderate when he served, and definitely was able to bridge that gap with no parties and Republicans. And so it's a change for us, but I think, you know, we're going to keep working and make sure every vote gets counted.
And David, I mean, if Miller Meeks does prevail as the winner in the second congressional district, what a huge pickup for Republicans.
It is a huge pickup, and it would mean that Iowa has three of its four members of Congress would be Republican, which is a flip from the way it was just right now, where it's three Democrats and one Republican. So it's a big pickup. It's a big pickup for Iowa. It's a big pickup nationally. And nobody probably worked harder than Marionette in campaigning for that seat. And I know she'll do it. If she's the eventual winner, and I think she will be, I think she'll be a great representative.
Well, David, as you were pointing out, if you think of the first congressional district to the north of the Quad Cities with Abby Finkenauer, Ashley Hinson, the Republican, winning there, As you're pointing out, that would make all, if Miller Meeks once again prevails, that would make all of eastern Iowa Republican held in the congressional delegation. That's a big deal, because eastern Iowa is often thought of as kind of blue-ish.
It is deemed blue-ish, and now this will dispel that notion by having all of its members of Congress being Republican.
Why do you think that is? I mean, is it hard work by the party? I'm sure you're going to say it's the quality candidates as well, but I mean, do you feel that there's some kind of a sea change in eastern Iowa?
There may be a sea change in eastern Iowa. It's the biggest part of the state, number one, and it's highly educated with the universities being in the first. Well, I guess Ames is more middle, but UNI and the University of Iowa being in the eastern side of the state, I think that makes it a more educated part of the state. And there's a big mixture of jobs. It's not completely blue collar. It's not completely white collar. It's not completely agriculture. It's got a little bit of all. And it'll be well served by the leaders we've chosen.
Well, Alicia, we were talking about the fact that eastern Iowa seems to be changing and maybe swaying a little more towards the Republicans. And when you think of eastern Iowa historically, you were thinking like Dubuque was always very Democratic. You were thinking that Scott County, of course, Johnson County, the home of Iowa City, being Democratic, real strongholds there. And that's not really the case anymore. Why is this changing in Iowa?
Well, I don't know that you can necessarily use this particular election as a bellwether for, you know, a trend change. The one thing that hasn't been talked about a lot here locally is the fact that we had pretty low voter turnout between 18 and 35 year olds. And then also considering the congressional district, that's going to have a large impact on the college campuses. And we do have a lot of folks learning remotely for COVID. So a lot of students that would normally be voting and usually voting Democratic weren't actually in state, you know, at school at that time to do so. And so, despite efforts to get folks early registered and stuff like that, we definitely saw a dip in that. I know going into the election, I haven't seen the post-election numbers for that age demographic, but we were 13% in 2016, and we only had 6.5% going in as far as early votes that had been cast as of Monday.
And I understand that argument, is that perhaps it wasn't as easy for younger people to vote than ever, but I mean, people were setting this up as such a consequential election, and that every vote counts, that you learned 4 years ago. What more does it take to get some people to get out and vote?
You know, and I, as a young, as somebody who was young and elected at 28, it's disheartening to see that our turnout was so low for the younger folks. And I, that's something I think that needs to be looked at and studied, and we need to address how we can kind of break that trend. And that is not necessarily a trend that we saw nationally. It is more unique here locally. And so I think that our local leaders are going to have to really take a look at how that is compiled and what's driving that up and down.
David, once again, in Iowa, a pretty good night for Republicans. Let's talk about the state legislature as well. One thing that we noticed from the vote is that incumbents did just fine as far as this area is concerned. About 3 weeks ago, there were reports that the Democrats thought they had a chance of taking over the Iowa House, and instead the Republicans picked up, I believe, as many as 7 seats statewide. That's a pretty good night for Republicans in the state house.
That's true, and I filmed another program with Alicia about 2 weeks ago where she said they were hoping to pick up 3 seats here in Scott County from the Republicans. I believe she was referring to the Gary Moore seats, the Ross Poshton seats, and the Norman Mompson seat. And all 3 of those Republican legislators won their races handily.
Alicia, that's true. I mean, the incumbents did very well. The Republicans did very well in the House seats in our area of Iowa.
Yeah, I think that was probably one of the bigger surprises of the night is that we did see, voters going to considering the disapproval ratings of things, COVID, just the divisiveness that our country's in right now. I think it was really surprising because usually when you see public trends going that direction, you also see a whiplash towards incumbents, and we really didn't see that this cycle at all.
Well, and as a matter of fact, I looked at a lot of the races in this area, and Alicia, I'll start with you. You take a look at Monica Kurth, the Democrat, winning 55% of the vote. Ross Poshton, the Republican, 56% of the vote. Phyllis Thede, the Democrat, 56% of the vote. And as we were saying, Gary Moore, 55% of the vote. I mean, everything seemed to have fallen, whether you were a Democrat or a Republican, in an area of 55 to 45 in all of these races.
Yeah, I know. And that is definitely, it's odd. That's kind of an anomaly that we don't see. And it's interesting where we did lose incumbents. I know we lost a couple Democratic seats in the outer Des Moines area, and those are areas that have been trending in local elections definitely towards the blue. And so it's really interesting to kind of see how it shook out. But yeah, definitely here, I would say incumbents really, really pulled it out this year.
Well, David, I mean, 55-45, 55-45 over and over again. I mean, does that not spell purple to you?
It spells purple to me, and I think what we're seeing as far as those outer Des Moines seats, as you're seeing, those were red seats until 2 years ago. Maybe it's just a return to the red, a return of suburban voters to the Republican Party. And to move forward and be successful in the future, the Republican Party is going to have to appeal to suburban voters. I think our message appeals to suburban voters. We just have to make it more known, because we will carry suburban voters in the future if we have the right message.
Well, David, I was looking at the exit polling for Iowa as well, and they took a look at eastern Iowa in particular. In eastern Iowa cities, according to exit polls, Joseph Biden won 55% of the vote. But in east central Iowa, which is basically our area of Iowa, it went about 55% for President Trump. There's really, once again, we're talking purple once again, and also the fact that both Mr. Trump and Mr. Biden were both competitive in this area.
Well, that's true, but remember 4 years ago, this area went for Mr. Trump, now President Trump as well.
Yep.
So this is not a market. I mean, he won the second congressional district pretty handily in 2016 and won it again this year.
Yeah, that was the,
I don't know
that
how
was
he the... did in the first district because
And that's a good point because, I mean, 4 years ago, it was the 17th district which went Democratic, and it went for President Trump as well in Illinois. And as you said, the second district in Iowa went with Dave Loebsack, the Democrat, but also went with President Trump. Alicia, I mean, I don't want to relitigate 4 years ago, but, I mean, it was kind of an interesting area, to our area in particular, to keep an eye as far as the Biden-Trump campaigns.
Yeah, and I think this sends a message to the candidates that were elected. I think, the people want a divided government. And Iowa's no better, example, I guess, of that than anywhere else in the country. And I think, it sends a larger message that, we need to start looking at ways we can work together across party aisle, party lines, and for the common good of Iowa and the United States. And so, I think all of our candidates who are elected and who have a victory this time, I really do hope that they all take it, regardless of party, all take it to heart and look and think about ways that we can start building building ourselves back from this pandemic and just putting a new page forward in our history.
Democrats really have a problem with rural America, it seems. In Iowa in particular, 63% of the rural vote in Iowa went for President Trump. What do Democrats have to do to win over more of the rural vote?
Well, I think you started to see a little bit more of us, I guess, getting the message. It seems very, odd as you look at the economic impact of some of the president's policies and things that we saw with ethanol. It was kind of surprising actually to see him do as good in the Iowa rural areas as he did. But I think, we need to start looking at are those the economic issues that people want us to be talking about, or are there bigger things, social issues or things that they're concerned about that we're not addressing?
And David, I mean, one of the big themes from the president was not only we've turned the corner as far as COVID-19 is concerned, but also that he's going to be the one that's best able to rebuild the economy. That seemed to have resonated as well.
Well, he's proven that he's a good leader of the economy, has good policies on the economy. But I think what I think plays a lot in the reason that the farmers and the agricultural community favor Trump, President Trump, is because he's worked for them. He's worked to renegotiate those poor trade deals. He's worked to rein in Chinese power over our markets. He's met their concerns. He's worked hard for them. They recognize that. I was out in the field with farmers during the last summer, and I mean, the embargo was hurting them, but they were going to stick with President Trump. They were going to stick with him and see it through, because they knew that they had to get tough on China, and the president did get tough on China, and it's reaping results.
The Iowa exit poll, once again, I keep going back to this, is that this was a survey of voters after they had voted. 82% of Iowans believe their financial situation is better now than it was 4 years ago. I was surprised at that number, 82%. Alicia, I mean, you can go back to the old Clinton campaign. It's the economy, economy, economy. And if people are voting their pocketbook, it sure seems like Joe Biden didn't convince them that he was the man as far as the economy is concerned in Iowa.
Yeah, and I think, definitely, I feel like the folks here, economy isn't as big of an issue as it is in other areas. We've, been somewhat resilient to the pandemic and just other current events that are happening. But I do think, we're also one to lag behind. And I would look back to the farm crisis of the 80s and see how that trickles down years after the federal, other states are recovering and in growth, and we were still in decline. So I caution us to get too excited that the economy is going in the right direction. I think that is an issue that will continue to, be a topic of conversation, but definitely that was not the issue that the voters in Iowa were wanting to hear from Joe Biden.
Well, and David, I was looking at the demographics, too, as far as the income brackets are. Those who make more than $100,000 in Iowa, $100,000, 50% voted for Joe Biden, 47% said they voted for President Trump. That's much closer than I would have anticipated.
I would, too. If it's the economy, stupid, that certainly doesn't bear witness to that truth. Because you would think people in that income bracket would attribute some of their success, at least, to the underlying economy that has been promoted and has been not developed, but certainly enhanced by President Trump. Trump's policies unregulating the economy, renegotiating those trade deals, an easy money supply. Those are the tools you use to build a strong economy, and they were utilized successfully by President Trump.
Let's talk about gender then, too, because this was an interesting issue, is that it was a belief that President Trump had a huge issue with women, white women in particular. And in Iowa, according to this exit poll, once again, 50% of white women backed Joe Biden, but still 48% backed Donald Trump, David. That's also a bit of a surprising number to me, if that theory that President Trump had a problem with white women was absolutely true.
Well, I don't know. I don't know the real reason for that. I can speculate that Trump's position on abortion aligns with a lot of white women, and that may have been the factor that caused a lot of white women to vote for President Trump. And the fact that they're seeing that their families are doing better. And Trump gets a lot of credit, rightfully so, for that, and that would be another reason why women, or actually anyone, would vote for President Trump.
Alicia, I mean, how do you read the tea leaves for that as far as the female vote in 2020 is concerned for the president?
Well, and it's interesting, obviously, Iowa's got a lot of white women. So we're a pretty white state. Our minority population is not that high. So it is hard to kind of see where that would make that difference in the exit polling. But I'd also say that was the group that carried him. And I don't know that him not having any white women supporting him was necessarily the case. It just wasn't in the large quantity that they had last time. And I think that was kind of a mixed message getting sent through the media, is it's not really about, you know, the huge amount of people that aren't supporting him. He still had, you know, part of his base obviously with him. But he also picked up in other areas. He did very well with the Latino vote. And so there's areas that typically Democrats have done better in, and that we just did not see the performance and those correlate into votes.
But sometimes you wonder why not. I mean, 4 years ago, Hillary Clinton didn't do as well with the Hispanic vote as people thought she would then. I mean, let's be honest, in the last, if you go back to the Romney campaign, and when Republicans dissected that election, they were saying Republicans have a Hispanic problem, and it just doesn't seem to play out, especially when the number of Hispanic voters is increasing so much more. You would think that the Democrats would be banking on that, and that doesn't seem to be true, Alicia.
I think it's definitely something we as a party, we try to be the big tent party and inclusive of everybody and enjoy celebrating diversity. And I think, you know, as a party, that will be something that will be postmortem, probably discussions within the Democratic leadership circles is how do we start coming back from that, and how do we start communicating with that voter base a little bit better?
Well, and David, I mean, the yeah, people,
can I,
the
can
people
I just
of,
say that,
yeah, go ahead.
The Republicans are a big tent too. We celebrate diversity. And we certainly want to have a diverse party, and we think that, you know, the Latins that are, the Latinos that are now voting for Republicans is reflective of our outreach.
And that's what I was going to point out, because if you think about it, if you look at the Republican convention, there were very many people of color that spoke in defense of the Republican Party and the president as well. I mean, does this show pretty much that the Republicans are on the right track to garner more minority votes in the future?
Yes, I think so. I think that you saw it at the convention, you see it at the candidates. We have a number of African-American candidates who are Republicans who won last night, and that's reflective of the inclusive policies that we have. And you know, white people, Latinos, African-Americans, we all have the same values. We all want a strong family. We want a strong economy. We want to be able to pray to our God in our own way. We have the same values, we have the same desires, and we're speaking to that now. We're recognizing that we're all in this together. We have the same values.
David, let's talk about the days and weeks ahead. Usually after an election, there's a big call of coming together. But on the national scene, this is such a close election and there's still votes to be counted. Are you worried that as Americans, that we're not going to come together very quickly after this election?
Well, I think yes, I do worry that we won't come together quickly after this election, but I don't think it'll be the fault of anybody in the Republican Party. I think the Republicans are ready to come together. We're ready to govern. We're ready to do the people's works. And that's what we intend to do.
But you don't think that the president has a role in this? I mean, the president's already talking about, you know, the fact that it's a rigged system and all that. That's not really bringing people together.
Well, he's concerned about that, because if that caused the election to tilt one way or the other, then certainly he's got to take that issue and take it to its logical extreme, which is probably filing a lawsuit and righting the wrongs that were, if there were any, that were made during the election. So there's got to be some confrontation in order to make sure that your system was fair and that every vote was counted, and counted once.
But there also has to be some kind of a conclusion too, right?
Well, of course, there's going to be a conclusion. the conclusion will be when it's all said and done, and if it goes to court, it'll be when the court makes its decision.
And Alicia, I think that's the thing, is that, I mean, we're talking about coming together and we're talking about a conclusion to this election, and one person's conclusion is not necessarily another person's conclusion. You could fight this into court for quite some time.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's definitely going to be a sensitive area for both sides. I think, you know, either if you win or if you lose, either side, this is not a good situation. And it's actually, you know, it's not really good for either party, in my opinion, because as you move forward, it's hard to govern when you have a country that's this divided. So like I had mentioned earlier, it's really something that we need to start looking past the divisiveness and start looking at ways we can unite and come together, regardless of what the outcome is. And I know, you know, it's been hard, and it you do have President Trump, you know, kind of egging on his supporters to kind of question what the process and what's happening. But, you know, we really do have to trust our system. It's held up in our country for hundreds of years, and we have to respect that and hope that it'll continue that way.
Alicia, what's the big takeaway from the year 2020?
Well, I think my biggest surprise was we thought it was going to be a year of change, and it seemed to be more of a year of status quo. You saw a lot of, like we mentioned earlier, a lot of the incumbents were protected. We pretty much saw incumbents across the board doing really, really well, and that's Democrat and Republican. So I don't think it was the sweeping change election that we maybe saw in 2008 with Barack Obama, but you know, it definitely surprised a lot of people, and it'll continue to be election we talk about in political science classes for years, I'm sure.
Yeah, every election is that way. David, what's your big takeaway from this year 2020, this election?
Well, I don't think it was the most consequential election of our lifetime, certainly not my lifetime. The most consequential election of my lifetime was probably 1980, the Reagan-Carter election. That was a consequential election. The winner of that election was going to have a profound impact on the future of the United States. I think with the protection you saw of the election of all the incumbents, you have an American people that certainly seems to indicate that they're in favor of the status quo. They're not for a lot of change. They're certainly not for ditching our constitutional system of government, which was on the minds of a lot of people on the left, you know, packing the Supreme Court, which won't happen now with a Republican Senate, or, you know, statehood for D.C. and Puerto Rico. That probably won't happen. And you won't see a lot of socialist policies get through a Republican Senate in the next 2 years.
Our thanks to Scott County Democratic Chair Alicia Gaiman and Scott County Republican Chair David Millage.
Thanks for listening to The Cities with Jim Mertens. And watch The Cities Thursday nights at 7, Sunday afternoon at 4, and Monday night at 6 on WQPT PBS for the Quad Cities region.
WQAD Podcast Network.